This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Zero Hour, Book 5 of Expeditionary Force, written by Craig Allinson, performed by R.C. Bray. Chapter 1. "Colonel Bishop, it has been 14 hours," Hans Chotek told me unhelpfully while glancing meaningfully at his watch. I wasn't wearing a watch. The United States Army gave me a nice watch, which now mostly sat unused in a drawer in my cabin. I think it was in a drawer. That is where I put it, but I hadn't seen it in a while. That drawer held some of my cold weather gear, and since I hadn't experienced cold weather in a while, that gear hadn't gotten any usage since we left the planet Newark. Anyway, I didn't need to wear a watch. The Z-phone in my pocket told me the time. And I didn't need a Z-phone to tell me 14 hours had passed since I sent Nagatha on a recon mission. The display on the far bulkhead of the galley had a counter in the top right-hand corner that now read 14:04:57, then 14:04:58. Yes, thank you, I did not need any reminding that my big gamble was so far a complete failure. Yes, sir. The first time he went missing, Skippy was gone for more than 17 hours, I said with a combination of hopefulness and defensiveness. Really, I just wanted Count Chocula to go away right then. I had come into the galley for a cup of coffee, not a lecture. And truthfully, I did not need a fourth cup of coffee that day. I had walked to the galley merely because I had not much else to do. With the Flying Dutchman drifting slowly through empty interstellar space, there wasn't much for me to do. Our science team and some of our pilots who had backgrounds in engineering or physics were working to keep the reactors functioning. My only job was to stay out of their way. To fill my time, I had been training to fly the larger type of Theranan dropship, the one we called a Condor. And I had been writing letters to the families of the people we lost on Kobamic when a one-in-a-million shot by a Golden BB shot down their dropship. It was likely that if we ever got back to Earth, the families of our fallen would not see my letters, as they weren't cleared to know the truth about the Merry Band of Pirates. They would be told their loved one had died in a training accident, and no details would be provided. I wrote the letters anyway. Writing them helped me deal with my own grief and guilt. Thinking about the people I had gotten killed on an alien world far from home was my mental state when our micromanaging mission commander pointed out the time. A civilian mission commander. Chotek raised an eyebrow. To his credit, he raised the pitcher of cream for me to pour in my coffee. "Do you think that 17 hours is significant somehow?" Taking a sip of coffee gave me time to bite my tongue, avoiding the smart-ass remark I wanted to make. What I wanted to do was inquire why the hell was he asking me about the internal workings of Elder AIs. A gulp of too hot coffee gave me enough of a pause to save myself from embarrassment and save myself from being a jerk. When I handed the pitcher back to Chotek, the look in his eyes was not the accusing irritation I had become all too familiar with since he came aboard. What I saw standing in front of me in the galley of a disabled alien pirate ship 4,700 light-years from Earth was simply a frightened human being. In that regard, our mission commander was no different from any other person aboard the Flying Dutchman. He was scared, and he was looking to me for a sign of hope. Any sign of hope, no matter how slim. 17 hours? I pondered the question, mentally kicking myself. The first time Skippy had gone on vacation, he had come back to us in about 17 hours. That was how long it took him to fight off the computer worm that had ambushed him. But I had never asked whether 17 hours was a significant number or totally random. Damn it. I should have asked him when I could. "I don't know, sir," I admitted. In the military, I had learned that "I do not know" is an acceptable answer. It was considered much better to be honest about your ignorance than trying to bullshit your way through a question. Saying "I do not know" is supposed to be followed up with "I will find out," which in this case I couldn't do. "The circumstances are different." "True," he nodded. Then he glanced at the counter again. "I'm sure you are busy, Colonel." He raised his own coffee cup as a salute, and I responded with the same gesture. Part of the reason I went to the galley was for some company, idle chit-chat. Instead, with Hans Chotek there holding a full cup of coffee and a muffin like he planned to be there a while, I decided to go back to my office. On the way back to my tiny closet of an office, I stopped by the bridge/CIC compartment, where absolutely nothing was happening. Two pilots, both Chinese, sat in their couches, talking quietly about something. The duty officer in the command chair was Captain Giraud of the French team, still not fully recovered from radiation poisoning on our last mission. He had nothing to report, and the CIC crew had absolutely nothing on census. With the nearest star almost 2 light-years away, that was not surprising. If we were faced with a threat, the duty officer in the command chair had two options. Order the pilots to perform a short emergency jump that Dr. Friedlander of our science team strongly recommended against attempting, or flip up the safety cover and press the button to set off the cluster of tactical nukes in a cargo bay. According to Friedlander, trying to use our wonky jump drive might be more dangerous than explosively compressing the plutonium cores of our nukes. On that happy note, I went back to my office, where my iPad was mocking me by displaying the counter clock at 14:19:08. More than 14 hours had passed since Nagatha went on the recon mission I had requested her to perform. At the time, we both had known what I asked her to do was extremely risky. Possibly risky to the merry band of pirates, absolutely risky to her. Whether the submind Skippy had named Nagatha Christie was truly sentient or not, I felt bad about asking her to do something that would not only very likely be fatal for her, but also very likely stupid and useless. Nagatha told me not to worry about the risk to her, since if the Flying Dutchman remained trapped in interstellar space, we were all certain to die anyway, including her. In my defense, I was desperate, grasping at straws. The ship was trapped in interstellar space, 12 light-years from the Lagoon Nebula in the Sagittarius arm of the galaxy. Where in the galaxy we were truly didn't matter. What mattered was that we had no way to get to a habitable planet, and the ship was slowly dying around us. Dr. Friedlander had a brilliant idea to stretch out the life of our jump drive. It was a brilliant idea. We simply had not been able to make it work. After our last jump nearly failed, and the science team was plunged into utter despair, I became desperate. Desperate enough to try something. Anything. So I asked Nagatha to download her entire consciousness into Skippy's beer can. My hope was that she would find the irascible asshole in there and wake him up. If she learned that Skippy had been relaxing on a couch, wearing fuzzy slippers and eating bonbons while watching trashy TV, I would be pissed at him. I would also be overjoyed at his return. If she couldn't find Skippy in there, at least Nagatha might be able to give us a hint at Skippy's fate. And to tell the full truth, a tiny piece of me was hoping that, given the full resources inside Skippy's tightly packed beer can, Nagatha might be able to expand her consciousness enough to fix our jump drive. The worst thing that could happen was Nagatha could disappear, and we would never know what happened to her. Given that we were already facing certain death when our reactors failed, Nagatha disappearing wouldn't significantly make our situation any worse. She had disappeared. The nanosecond after she reported she was retracting her consciousness from the Dutchman's inadequate computers, she went silent, and we hadn't heard a peep from her since. Skippy's beer can was still cold, with no change in status our sensors were able to detect. When we returned to the ship from our mission on Kobamic, at first I kept Skippy's silver beer can in a recess on the bridge, but seeing his silent form was a constant, depressing reminder to the duty crew. To avoid distracting people from their jobs, I next moved him to my office desk, then realized that was only me indulging in useless self-recrimination. So I had moved him to the science lab, where his inert beer can was surrounded by sensors. I set the coffee mug on my desk without sitting down. The mug was painted with the logo I had designed, a pirate monkey surfing on a winged banana. UN X-Force scrawled across the top, with UNS Flying Dutchman on the bottom. Unless we could get the jump drive working again, maybe I should rename our ship Drifting Dutchman, or Dying Dutchman. That would probably not be good for morale. Dr. Friedlander, I addressed our friendly local rocket scientist when I walked into the science lab. His chair was to the right, which allowed me to avoid looking to the left where Skippy's beer can was resting in a cradle on a workbench. How is your team? He looked as tired as I felt, even though we had all been getting more sleep than usual. Or we had all been spending more time in our bunks, whether we got more sleep or not. I know I was suffering from insomnia while laying uselessly in my bunk, mentally ticking off the days until our reactors inevitably shut down and left the ship to freeze in interstellar space.
The team?
He shook his head, taking a moment to refocus his thoughts.
Fine. They're fine.
He waved vaguely to the other workstations in the science lab, which was empty.
As you know, Colonel, most of my team is researching Reactor 2.
I did know that. The science team, in Kristang armored spacesuits and accompanied by a spec ops team to keep them out of trouble, were poking around in Reactor 2, which was shut down cold. That reactor had some residual radiation, of the type the armored suits could protect them against. What Friedlander hoped to gain by going into the damaged reactor was better insight into how the containment system and fuel feed systems worked. Ultimately, he hoped we could understand the mechanisms well enough to stretch out the useful life of Reactor 3. Number 3, even at minimum power, was expected to automatically shut itself down within a year, probably a lot sooner.
I know. Have you found anything useful?
He unconsciously touched his forehead, which still had an impression from the helmet liner of the suit he had worn.
We don't know yet. We need to analyze the data.
He pointed to the display in front of him. Friedlander had led the first team inside the reactor.
It's odd.
He looked at the display.
Skippy told me I had to give him a new joke every day as a sort of payment for keeping the reactors functional. Since he went away, I've been writing down jokes I haven't told him.
He shrugged.
It was a pain having to come up with new jokes. Now I'd be happy to tell jokes all day if that brought him back.
The reactor, we did get a good look at the containment system. It is not what we expected.
He went on for a bit about the exotic matter in the reactor's containment system, while I struggled to keep my eyes from glazing over.
Doctor, I interrupted him before I fell asleep. I'm sorry. The reactors are important, but we have at least several months before they come inoperable. If we can get the ship close to a star, we can supplement our power supply with solar panels.
We don't have enough solar panels currently.
We are working on...
I know, I said, letting a touch of sleep-deprived irritation creep into my voice and regretting it.
Let's deal with one problem at a time. Can we use the jump drive again?
He looked away, tapped a few keys on his laptop, then looked back toward me, avoiding my eyes. When he looked up, his expression told me what I needed to know.
I do not recommend it. Our last jump damaged the drive controller unit, and we don't understand its functioning well enough to attempt a repair. The controller unit can be partially bypassed, however.
He took a deep breath.
I'm concerned another jump would degrade the remaining coils to the point that...
He looked behind me to where Skippy's dead beer can rested on a workbench.
Even if Skippy comes back, the drive might be beyond his ability to repair.
Colonel, he looked me straight in the eye. In any circumstance, I do not think the drive should be used for more than one more jump. One jump is not far enough to get us to a star system.
And there is no point taking the risk, I agreed.
Without faster-than-light capability, our remaining options dwindled to two, neither of them attractive. We could continue drifting in space while shipboard systems slowly failed one by one in the hope that Skippy would magically awaken and save us, or we could give up and detonate our nukes, saving us all from freezing or suffocating to death. We had salvaged a pair of derelict Kristang transport ships on our last mission, and it struck me suddenly that I had a glimpse of what the Kristang civilians on those ships had felt. They, too, had been aboard ships that were incapable of jumping, and as their reactors failed, heat radiated away into space and oxygen ceased to be recycled. With those ships grossly overloaded by Kristang civilians, oxygen had likely become a problem long before they felt cold. Unless we could change our situation, the merry band of pirates faced the same fate as the Kristang aboard those derelict transports. Only we would have longer to think about it before our reactors failed. I changed the subject slightly because the discussion wasn't going anywhere useful.
What about the lifeboat reactor?
His expression brightened.
That might be more promising. It is a different design, not only different from our current reactors as modified by Skippy,
but different from the original reactors installed by the Theranin when that relay station was a starship. The relay station was intended to operate in a remote location for decades, and the station crew was not trained to perform more than simple, routine maintenance. Because the relay station reactors had to operate on their own for extended periods, they are a simple, rugged design. The lifeboat reactor does not generate anywhere near the output of our reactors, but it can go years before it needs heavy maintenance by a visiting service team. Unfortunately, that particular relay station is old, and the reactor was already due for major overhaul when we boarded the station. Yeah, but it has been limping along at minimum power since we stole it, right?
That is correct, Friedlander said in a voice that couldn't help sounding like a professor lecturing a dim-witted student.
However, it sustained damage when we fought that Theranin cruiser near the relay station, and the reactor automatically shut down then. It wasn't designed to be restarted without major maintenance. Skippy did what he could with his bots, but the lifeboat's reactor lost significant capacity. He shook his head. We could get 6, maybe 7 months out of it. That's a guess.
And you don't like making guesses.
I'm an engineer, he explained without apology. I need hard data. I left that depressing conversation, intending to hit the gym for a run on a treadmill. While I hated pounding out miles on a treadmill, I always felt better after. Right then, I wasn't feeling it. I changed clothes and went to the gym anyway, but all the treadmills were occupied. Even our hardcore spec ops people were feeling down by our situation. They weren't running or lifting weights with anywhere near the intensity they typically displayed. And what was the point of keeping yourself in peak physical condition if all we could do was drift through empty space in a slowly dying ship? Damn, that thought really depressed me. So I turned around and almost collided with Sergeant Adams.
"Leaving already, sir?" she asked as she cocked a head at me.
I'm not feeling it today, Adams. She cocked her head again. I knew that look. A lot of sergeants had given me that look during my military career. Adams was Marine Corps, not Army. But sergeants are sergeants. Damn it, I was a sergeant in my permanent Army rank. Not that technicalities like rank meant anything thousands of light years from Earth. Lowering her voice, she said,
"A lot of people aren't feeling it, sir. Seeing our commander walking around with that sad puppy dog look on your face isn't helping."
That straightened me up. I heard that, Sergeant, and I turned to see one of the rowing machines was available.
"Tell me, what's your secret to maintaining a positive attitude?"
"Not needing to," she explained simply.
What?
"I still have a job to do, Colonel. I'm going to do that job, whether it sucks or not, until the last light bulb on this ship goes out. I don't know what the Army is like, sir."
There was that cocked head again.
"But the Marine Corps doesn't much care whether you're having a good morale day or not. You do your job regardless. Semper Fidelis, not when I'm feeling it, Fidelis."
"Got your message loud and clear, Sergeant." I winked at her and actually managed a grin. "Hey, we still have lights, heat, air, even fresh food from the hydroponics bay where Major Sims was growing vegetables and fruit. I've embraced the suck much worse than this."
"We all have," she laughed.
"Colonel, whether it works or not, sending Nagatha in like that was a gutsy call."
"Not really," I shrugged. "I had to do something."
"Have faith, sir. We've gotten out of plenty of impossible situations before."
"Before, we always had Skippy to help us," I reminded her.
"Yes, and there were plenty of times when Skippy said a situation was impossible, yet you always found a way out of it."
"I will have faith, Adams."
"Hoorah."
She held out her fist. "Hoo-ah," I replied, and bumped a fist. It happened the way it did because I am always in the wrong place at the wrong time and because Skippy is an incorrigible asshole. After Adams shamed me into exercising, I did feel better. Maybe it was the extra oxygen flushed through my brain. I went back to my cabin for a shower, and I was in a relatively good mood when my cabin door slid open. Then I saw the pile of outfits Major Sims had made for Skippy.
On top was the cute pink Easter Bunny outfit we never had an opportunity to dress his beer can in. The outfits were in a drawer. I had been in the process of putting them away in plastic bags, but the drawer was open, and I saw them. That made me immediately burst into tears, and I hit the button to close the door behind me. There were plenty of tears flowing around our pirate ship, mostly tears of fear and helpless frustration at our hopeless situation. In this case, my tears were for Skippy. He had spent millions of years buried in the dirt, and after only a short time awake and tormented by ignorant, smelly humans, he was gone. His life with us was far too short. I stripped off my sweat-soaked gym clothes, stuffing them in a bag, and knowing they had to be washed manually now that Skippy's invisible magic laundry fairies were inoperable. In the too-low Theranin shower, I knelt down and pressed my head into the wall, letting water cascade over me while I sobbed. As there was nothing useful I could do, I decided to give free rein to my grief. Let it all out, so I could then towel off, put on a fresh uniform, and be the ship's captain again. That's what my crew needed me to be for them. "Hey, Joe," a familiar voice said behind me, and I bashed my head on the low ceiling. "Skippy!" Blood ran down into my eyes from a gash on my forehead where I had hit the showerhead. I ignored it, spinning around and awkwardly getting out of the shower to see his familiar Grand Admiral holographic avatar on top of a cabinet.
"How are...
Ah, dude!"
His avatar shielded its eyes with a hand.
"Nobody wants to see that. Jeez, put a towel on, will you? Ugh, the glare off your pasty white butt cheeks is blinding my senses. Damn, most people wish they had teeth that white."
I was so happy I didn't argue, just reached for a towel and held it in front of me. The shower water cut off behind me, telling me that Skippy was again in control of shipboard systems. That was a very good sign. My Z-phone was lighting up with messages, people alerting me that Skippy was back and appearing all over the ship. I quickly replied with a broadcast message that I was chatting with Skippy and that senior staff should meet me in the conference room in 10 minutes.
"How are you?"
The avatar held out a hand and waggled it side to side.
So-so, Joe.
The avatar wrinkled its nose.
"Whew! Did you monkeys do laundry at all while I was gone? Damn, it smells like a landfill in here."
"I love you too, Skippy. Oh man, I wish I could hug your avatar."
"Yuck! That is disgust-"
"Oh hell. I love you too, man." His voice trailed off into sobs. Skippy? I looked at his avatar more closely. It was fuzzy. The edges of the hologram were not crisp like usual. His enormous hat was tilted to one side, and his left leg wasn't connected to his shiny beer can torso. "Are you, drunk?" The avatar swayed slightly, the image flickering.
"I am experiencing reduced cognitive functioning, Joe. You might say I am slightly buzzed."
"Oh, that's not good. Can you operate the ship?"
"Restoring my control over the ship's operations is taking most of my capacity right now. That is why I am not throwing witty banter at you. To start, I am taking back control of Reactor 3. Then I..."
"Oh, my God! What in the hell did you apes do to my jump drive?" His voice was an uncharacteristic screech. "We kinda broke it, Skippy."
"You think? Dude! You couldn't have dorked it up any worse if you had tried. Oh, man, this is freaking hopeless. Hopeless!"
He threw his avatar's hands up. "Can you fix it?" I asked, with my insides turning to jelly.
"Maybe. I don't know. I'm using all my brain power to restore Reactor 3 to full functioning. I will examine the jump drive coils later."
"All your brain power?" That didn't sound right. It didn't sound good. "What happened to you?"
"Joe, most of my processing power is inaccessible to me. To escape from the worm, I created a firewall and hid part of my consciousness behind it. Nagatha found me in there. She opened a channel for me to communicate with the outside universe."
"What happened to Nagatha?"
"She's fine, Joe. At least I think so. I am examining what is left of her matrix slowly, so I can make sure the worm hasn't contaminated her.
The last thing we need is that worm getting out and infecting the ship's computers. Nagatha will probably have to wait a couple hours to be restored. I need all the processing power I can get for myself.
That's a relief. I still feel bad about asking her to go in there.
You took a huge risk, Joe.
I know.
Skippy, I was desperate.
Don't worry about it, Joe. That was a great idea, a brilliant, inspired idea.
Sending Nagatha into my canister was the only thing that could have brought me back.
Thank you. I'm grateful. Do not hug me.
He waved his hands to keep me away. I'm not that grateful.
Great Googly Moogly, you sure screwed things up here while I was gone.
Great Googly Moogly? Maybe Skippy was more than a little bit buzzed.
So you can't access most of your processing power. What does that mean for us?
That means nothing good, Joe.
I can communicate with the outside world. That means I can communicate with and control shipboard systems. My response will not be the lightning speed you have become accustomed to. For example, when I'm programming the jump drive, that is going to absorb almost all my attention, so I won't be able to handle other tasks. Other systems will have to run on automatic, or you monkeys can fumble around with them as best you can.
Also, well, this is kind of embarrassing.
You've lost your ability to sing? I asked hopefully.
Ha! No way, dude! Nothing can keep me from sharing my awesome singing talent with you. That would be a crime against the universe.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, I replied, disappointed.
Crap. Maybe I should have instructed Nagatha to erase Skippy's love of show tunes while she was poking around in there.
You can still sing, so what is embarrassing?
I can't do most of what makes Skippy the Magnificent, so, you know, magnificent.
So, you're what now, Skippy the Meh?
No, you jackass, I am still incredibly awesome. There are just a few simple little things I can't do right now.
Like what?
You know my hobby of screwing with the laws of physics?
Creating micro-wormholes, warping space-time, that sort of thing?
Uh-huh, yeah.
I can't do that.
Those functions are resident in another space-time, and I can't access them from here because I'm trapped behind the firewall I created in this low-rent slum of a space-time.
Joe, the only thing I can do, basically, is think and talk. I can talk to the ship's computers, give them instructions, and control them, but I can no longer enhance their capabilities. As long as I am operating on restricted capacity, the Dutchman can't do anything it wasn't designed to do.
Hell, a pirate ship is so beat up right now it can't do half the things it was designed to do.
Oh, shit.
Those are my thoughts exactly.
Okay. You said so long as you are operating on restricted capacity, you can't do your awesome magic stuff, I mused while pulling uniform pants on.
How can we bring back the old Skippy?
There is a way to do that, right?
There is a way, Joe.
I think there is a way. Probably.
Maybe.
Ah, okay, look. This has never been done before, but there is no reason it shouldn't work, theoretically. Although in the interest of full disclosure, my thinking process is not working at its best right now.
Oh, great.
Hey, I'm still way smarter than your entire species combined.
And we'll see about that.
What is this thing you want to do that no one has ever done before?
Now I have to explain it to you?
Damn, no way can I dumb this down enough for you to understand it.
Try, Skippy.
Ugh. Can we compromise, and I explain it as a metaphor?
Well, I wasn't going to ask for the math, so go ahead.
All right.
I'll break it down Barney style for you, that's appropriate.
Joe, I've told you before that most of my mass, memory, and processing power are not in this local space-time. The laws of physics here are a pain in the ass.
I swear. Whoever designed...
Skippy, stick to the point, please.
If his brain wasn't working properly, he might wander off the subject and never come back.
Fine. Anyway, my beer can is basically an anchor that tethers me to this local space-time. That is how I can create magical effects here, like warping space-time and creating small, stable wormholes. Silly little party tricks that entertain the monkeys. My problem now, Joe, is that my consciousness is trapped in a tiny, tiny corner of my beer can. I was desperate to get away from the worm. I retreated and did the only thing I could to protect myself. The firewall is working for now, but I am stuck here, and time is running out.
From where I am, I can't fight back against the worm. Unless I can change the situation, it is inevitable the worm will destroy me when my firewall fails.
Got it. You need, what, a worm killer, something like that?
Nope. A worm killer would be great, except I don't know of anything that can kill this worm.
Remember, Joe, I didn't know this worm existed until recently.
When the worm first attacked, I searched for references to the worm and any countermeasures. I didn't find anything useful, not even a hint in any database available to me. So, no, I am not searching for a worm killer. What I am searching for is a way out of my canister. If I can get out of the tiny corner I'm stuck in, I can hit the worm from behind. Sort of.
Ugh, using metaphors like this is so limiting.
It's working great for me, Skippy. So you need to pull yourself out of there. I assume this is not something where you can download your consciousness into a thumb drive?
No.
The fact that you even asked such a stupid question.
What then?
We find some super-duper computer that can hold you. Joe, this will go a lot faster if you stop guessing.
Shutting up now, oh great one.
What I need, Joe. Damn, how do I explain this to an ignorant monkey? What ties my beer can to the bulk of me in a higher phase of space-time is a sort of extra-dimensional, conduit. I think that's the best way to describe it. The conduit moves around with me, because when my beer can moves in this space-time, the bulk of me doesn't necessarily move. When we jump, or go through a wormhole, I have conduit connections on both ends, so I never lose contact. If we jumped really, really far, like across the galaxy, then I might temporarily lose the conduit, and the part of me in a higher space-time would need to re-establish the connection. Otherwise, no problem.
I think I understand, as much as I need to.
Because you're trapped in a corner of your beer can, you can't access this conduit.
Exactly!
My extra-dimensional conduit is on the other side of the firewall, with the worm. What I need is to find another conduit so I can pull my consciousness out of my container and come back into it from another space-time.
That wasn't so difficult for me to understand. You dumbed it down really well, Skippy.
You upload yourself through a new conduit, then use your existing conduit to go back into your canister from, like, above. You can hit the worm from where it's not expecting an attack.
Close enough, Joe. You understand the important parts.
This conduit, is it something we have aboard the ship or can make?
I closed my eyes and said a silent prayer for the answer to be yes.
No.
Crap.
Okay. And now you're going to tell me senior species like the Rindaloo and Maxolks don't have this conduit technology either.
Good guess, Joe. That is true. None of the species active in the galaxy have access to the technology I need.
The Rindaloo have lame theories about stable connections to other space-times, but they are still not yet capable of creating such a conduit. They don't even have the math to describe it yet. And the Maxolks are absolutely clueless about it. These conduits are exclusively Elder technology.
Of course they are. Fantastic. Wonderful. This is just great.
We're going on another freaking scavenger hunt across the galaxy to find this conduit thingy?
No, Joe. We don't have time to randomly poke around the galaxy looking under rocks in hope of finding the prize. I don't have time for that.
And a conduit is not something we would find at an abandoned Elder site. We need an active conduit.
We need to find an active conduit? I asked, astonished.
The Elders, as far as I knew, were gone, and had been totally gone for a very long time. Although Skippy was active, so were the Sentinels. Clearly some of their tech was still active in the galaxy.
You know where an active conduit is?
I think I know where we can find one.
Actually, there are three sites within range that potentially have active conduits.
One of the sites is, let's just say I would rather not consider going there unless we absolutely have no choice.
What are the other two sites, and what do you mean, within range?
Within range means places we could go before I run out of time. Let's call my personal deadline 0 hour. The other factor is this ship has a limited life remaining, which you already knew. Even if a bunch of apes hadn't screwed up the jump drive, the Flying Dutchman has a finite number of jumps remaining before the drive assembly completely burns out.
Yeah, we did know that, I admitted.
We knew that fact, and because we had no solution to that problem, we had pushed it onto our things-to-worry-about-later list.
At the time, stopping the Kristang from going to Earth and then surviving until Skippy reawakened had been higher on the priority list.
Tell me about our two best options for finding an active conduit. Wait. First, tell me whether we can visit all three potential sites before we burn out the jump drive, because if that's an issue, we need to consider not only how risky it is going to each of these sites, but also whether going to one of them means the ship won't be able to reach the other sites. I want to have options if the first site or the first two sites don't have an active conduit.
Wow. Look at the big brain on Joe. Where did you learn to think like that?
And my cousin Jimmy is a FedEx driver. They have some fancy software that calculates the shortest course to hit all the points on his route.
Yes, there are many algorithms to optimize route planning. For example, the Floyd-Warshall equation.
Keep this above the nerd level, please.
Okay, he huffed.
The short answer is yes. We can visit all three potential sites, in any combination, before the jump drive becomes totally inoperable, I think. It's an estimate, you understand.
I do understand.
Okay, tell me about your preferred site of the two.
It's not that simple, Joe. The site that is most likely to have an active conduit is in a Theranin star system.
Now forget that one.
You haven't heard all the facts.
His voice now had a touch of peevishness, like the old Skippy I knew.
I've heard enough. Move on, please.
Is the other site a softer target?
Oh, certainly. The other site is on a Wargalin planet.
I knew from Skippy's lectures that the Wargalin were rivals of the Kristang, although the Wargalin were measurably behind the Kristang's level of technology. The Wargalin were the softest target we were likely to encounter in the local sector.
Can you give me some details?
Skippy explained briefly.
Okay. I was already thinking of how to sell an attack on the Wargalin to Chotek. He for sure was not going to like the idea of us making yet another enemy.
I need to talk with my boss.
Hey, if the second option is for us to hit the Theranin, and you don't even want to mention the third option,
what is that?
The Max Hulk site?
Max Hulks?
He blew a raspberry.
Please. Hitting the Max Hulks would be a piece of cake compared to the third option.
My blood ran cold.
Crap. Okay, you better tell me about it anyway.
Joe, you know how in the past I have said you are very much not going to like something?
Yeah.
You are going to totally freaking hate this.